And for this morning's Dhamma talk, we're going to be focusing on what we call the problems of meditation. Because when I talk about meditation, explain it, it all sounds so easy. Just sit there, close your eyes, let go, and you get jhanas. However, it doesn't feel as easy as it should be because there are obstacles and problems for making your mind nice and peaceful. And so that's what I wanted to talk about today. And of course, the biggest obstacle which everybody always talks about is they can't stop thinking. And that's one of the huge, biggest obstacles. Simply because in our culture, in our modern world, we are trained to think. And indeed, those people who think a lot are actually praised and go on shows as the great thinkers of the world. And that's one of the reasons why the world is in so much trouble. People are thinking too much. And we all think in different ways, and therefore we argue. And it was Pascal, a French philosopher, mathematician, in the mid-1600s. And he said one of my favorite quotes, "All the problems of men," it also includes women, "all come from not knowing how to sit still." And how true that is. So if we could just sit still and start thinking for a while, there we may be able to actually to see something and also get some insight. And people did ask me about insights yesterday, and I usually do this little exercise. And last year, just over 12 months ago, I went to one of my most memorable gigs. I get invited to many, many places, and most times I refuse, I'm too busy, but every now and again, you get an invitation to something which is really, as they say, out of left field. A weird invitation. And if it's really that weird, I'm going to go. And this particular invitation was an invitation to give the keynote address at the 2015 World Computer Congress. And I thought, I've never done that before. I don't know anything about computers, but that won't stop me. So I went there. And all these geeks, and there was I don't know how to use these things, have to usually get some help, but I gave the keynote address at this huge World Computer Congress that's in Daejeon in South Korea. And of course they asked, "What are you doing here?" And that's where I told them a little bit about innovation. One of the stories I told them, this is a little bit off subject, but it was in the, I think, 1918 or 1914 or somewhere around that time, St. Louis World Fair. They had a big World Fair in St. Louis, Missouri. And you know when you have these fairs, just like our fundraising, you have all sorts of different stalls next to each other. And it was just by chance, by fortuitous chance, that there was one store which was selling ice cream, and next to him was a store selling waffles. And you might think, what has waffles to do with ice cream? But they talked to each other there for quite a few weeks together. They talked, they became friends, and they decided to collaborate. And from their collaborations, waffles and ice cream, we got the ice cream cone. That is where the ice cream cone came from. Just a fortuitous coming together of opposites. What's waffles and ice cream got to do together? Who would ever think of putting them together? But they did, and it became very popular. So that was my introduction. What has Buddhist monks got to do with computing? Who knows? There might be some synergy happens, like the waffles and the ice cream, and a new device may come. Who knows? Not an iPhone, that's an idiot phone, but actually something a bit more like a silent phone. That'd be very nice, wouldn't it? We don't get any messages at all for Buddhists. Anyway, I don't know, but anyway, at that conference, to tell them how we can get the synergy and how we actually can get insights when we stop thinking. And this is important for innovation, just in business, in your life, answering problems, as well as the deep insights into the meaning of life. And I took the bottle of water, it's the only visual aid I had, and I asked, as I'm asking you now, what is this I'm holding up? Please, if you've seen me do this before, please collaborate. What is this? What else is it? What else can you see? What else? Come on, just not one person. You've got eyes too. What is this? Yeah, what else? What else? What else? What else? Because what happens is, the longer you hold it, the more you see. Usually, we'd hold it up. What is this? A bottle of water. Finished, done. You think you've captured everything about that object. You're finished, you're done with it. But when you force you to say, what else is it? What else is it? What else is it? The longer you look, the more you actually see. Not just the obvious bottle of water, but then you start to see other things. And soon you get to a point where you're looking at this, whatever it is, and you run out of names. You run out of descriptions. You stop thinking. And then there's a good chance you might see something new, original, innovative in what we're holding up here. You see how our thoughts stop us seeing deeper? We say, girl, boy, monk, nun. We think that's all there is. It stops us looking deeper into the nature of things. So that's why, if you really want insight, you have to shut up. Inside, be so still that all this anicca or dukkha or Four Noble Truths, shh, see deeper than that. And then there's a good chance you might get some insight. So it all comes from stillness. And the reason I said that at the very beginning with thinking, it is because we have been brainwashed into the assumption that you can solve problems by thinking about them. So you have some decision to make, and what do? Think about it. And what a waste of time that actually is. Even just, people are just finishing their end of the school year exams. Some have already finished them, and they're asking for some advice last week. Ajahn Brahm, year 12 exams, university entrance, how should I cope with these? Easy, just don't think about them. When I was a young monk, I would say this, and as soon as I say when I was a young monk, all the monks in my monastery would just, oh God, here we go again. No, when I really was an old monk, when I was a young monk, that we had to really work hard. If you nuns think you work hard, that's nothing compared to what I had to do when I was a young monk. We would have get up early in the morning, 3 o'clock, and then we'd do our chanting and meditation about 6:30. So we'd go on after, and then we'd have our one meal a day. You know what? The rice and frogs. And after the one meal a day, just totally malnourished, sleep deprived, we had to do really heavy physical work. And on this particular occasion, it was Ajahn Chah had just finished building his main hall in his monastery. And there was this huge pile of earth left over. Now, any compassionate monk would have got in a bobcat or an earth mover. But not Ajahn Chah. He had all these slaves called monks. And he said, okay, you guys move it. So, from about 9:30 in the morning, because we ate really early, from 9:30 in the morning to about 9:30 at night, because in the night time they got lanterns out, we were shoveling dirt, wheelbarrowing the dirt to move it for where Ajahn Chah wanted it. And this was hot. This was sticky. This was in jungles. Mosquitoes were biting you everywhere. And they took advantage of monks because they knew that we could not swat them. It was really unfair. They exploited our compassion. And so you're getting bitten, dirty, but, you know, you had some faith. It's good karma. I really believed in karma. It's for your teacher, least you can do. And it's 3 days hard work. At the end of those 3 days, I was dirty. Didn't have time for much of a shower. Your clothes, your robes were all filthy. And you were tired. You just wanted to meditate. And the following morning, after we finished moving that part of earth, early that morning, Ajahn Chah went off to visit another monastery. And the second monk, the deputy, after lunch, or breakfast, one meal a day, doesn't matter what you call it, and he said to everybody, he said, you know, I've looked at the pile of earth over there, and I think it's in the wrong place. We have to move it. And he had a point, you know, it was not nice in that place. So, another 3 days of pushing wheelbarrows of dirt, sweating, filthy, stinky, being eaten to death by the mosquitoes. But you still had your confidence and faith and good karma. 6 days continuous, hard slog. Finished at last. Now we moved it to where the second monk wanted it. And I had a rest that night. Oh, when you're really tired, you just hit the sack and you just go straight out. And before you know it, ding, 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 morning meeting, oh God, I still felt really dirty. But I thought, yeah, after arms round, then you can have a wash all your clothes and have a good meditate that day. But that night, Ajahn Chah returned. And after lunch, he said, I told you to move that earth over to that place. Why did you move it to another place? Move it back! And that was the time when I lost my faith. These senior monks, they don't have to push the wheelbarrows, they don't have to dig the earth, they don't have to get bitten by the mosquitoes. They're just under their huts talking to people all day. That's really unfair. I never became a monk to labor like this. This is not some concentration camp where people have to work so hard. I didn't want to become a monk like this. I want to study the Dhamma, not just be exploited. This is really unfair. I got very angry. And I'll say at the time, you know, this is what we used to do. Because we used to swear in English. Hoping the Thais can't understand what we say. It does help having another language. But of course, you may try and hide your anger. You can't. The body language tells everybody how you're feeling. And that is when one of the monks came over. If you heard this story before, it's worth telling because it's a very amazing, very helpful one. Then one of the other monks came over. He knew I was angry. He knew I was having a hard time. And he gave me this wonderful, wonderful teaching. It was not from Ajahn Chah, it was from another monk. He said to me, pushing the wheelbarrow is easy. Thinking about it is the hard part. And of course, he nailed me straight away. And I admitted it, I was being stupid. I was getting angry and upset because I was thinking too much. I stopped thinking. It's quiet. And honestly, that wheelbarrow suddenly became much lighter to push. And I had energy back again. We had fun racing each other to see who could get to the end first of all, just like, you know, people do, to make it fun. And those 3 days went so fast, the last 3 days. And after 9 days, thank God that they decided that's where they wanted that damn earth. They weren't going to be anymore, because I don't know if I could have carried on doing it another day or two. But anyway, it was a wonderful lesson, and I practiced that, taught that for a long time. It's year 12 exams, whether it's going for a biopsy or a mastectomy or any of these other things which, you know, you have to go through in life. Doing it is easy. Thinking about it is the hard part. Even dying is easy. You've done it many times. Thinking about it, that's the difficult part. So you see, much of life, we don't think about it, we just do it. It's just no problem at all. So that's one of your first problems. Jhana is easy to do. Thinking about it is the hard part. So stop thinking about it. Just let go. And then it's very easy. Our trouble, of course, is, yeah, we know that intuitively, but we've become such habitual thinkers. It's hard for us just to sit there and do nothing and be quiet. We always want to give our opinion about things. And of course, I blame school teachers for that. I remember as a young school kid, the teacher looked at me and said, "What do you think about that?" And I didn't think anything about it, and I got into trouble. So I don't think anything about it. Stupid. So you are forced to think about stuff. And that ruined, that put my meditation back so many years. So it is great, we can just don't need to think about things. Don't need to give your opinion about things. It's none of your business. So first of all, recognize that it's a bad habit, thinking too much. And instead of doing that, just do it. Your food, don't need to think about it, just eat it. Easy. Just sleeping, don't need to think about it, just do it. The Dhamma, please don't think about it. The meaning of the four Noble Truths, the five Khandhas, stream meaning, stop thinking about it for goodness sake. Just do it. Okay? And that makes your mind much more peaceful and you're more likely to actually to see the truth. Instead of thinking about it. An example of that, I don't know if you nuns remember this, but I was trying to teach you something one of the last times I went to Dharmasara Monastery. I needed to go to the toilet. I've been there such a long time, I know where the toilet is when I'm supposed to go, but I was doing this as a teaching exercise. I think I asked Venerable Hasapanya, "Where is the toilet?" And, you know, she quite kindly said, "Just over there, see, the door there's got toilet on it." And so I went to that door, and I pretended to urinate on the door. "What are you doing?" "Well," he said, "that's toilet. It's got the word on it on the outside, toilet. It says there, toilet, that must be where the toilet is." So now that's the entrance door to the toilet. Well, why do you actually put the word toilet on it? You should put toilet inside instead of on the outside. And it was just messing around, just to let people know that. These are just signs, these words. T-O-I-L-E-T is not the place where you have to do number ones and number twos. It shows you where that place is. It's a signpost. It points to what the real toilet is, not the name, but what it points to. And that's the thing with thoughts. All the thoughts are just signposts. They're not really truth or reality. Unfortunately, we've been so addicted to signposts, to comparing them, to linking them together, to translating them, to interpreting them and doing PhDs on signposts, to actually become a press professor of signposts in the universities. So we know all about the Four Noble Truths, Dependent Origination, Abhidhamma. We are professors of signposts. Where those actually things are pointing to, we've never even looked over there. Which is a big problem. So, with that little teaching in mind, how about having a little bit of insight practice now? I want to see how you react. So just be mindful of your reaction. Peace. 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 Okay, I know you're enjoying this, but I've got to give a talk. Did you notice that when I first said the word, you mind looked a little bit, but not that much. You repeated it, and the mind went a little bit further. It was looking where that word was pointing to. And after a little while, hopefully, you started to actually feel, knowing, embracing what that word is pointing to. You had real peace there. Not the word anymore, but the real thing. What the word peace is signifying. And this is actually what silence does. Because we're always talking too much, we actually don't even realize what the words are meaning. So peace becomes an idea. We have a thought, a concept. It's never an experience. Even things like letting go. How many times have you heard that word? So much, you know, you're fed up with hearing it. Come on, let go. Let go, let go, let go, let go, let go, let go. But how about let go? Let go. Let go. Let go. And you start to let go. You can actually feel that instruction. The mind starts to follow it. And after a while, you recognize what letting go is. Not as a thought anymore, but where it's pointing to. Now that is what insight is. You start to understand these really important qualities. You know, one of the qualities which Buddhists think they know, but it's amazing just how little they know about it, is compassion. It was really amazing for me as a teacher. I said, well, be compassionate. Said, oh yeah, I'm compassionate every day. And they argue with their wife. they tell their workers off. They really give their kids a hard time. And if they're teachers in monasteries, they give their young nuns or young monks a hard time. They say, you haven't got a clue what compassion is. Oh yes, we do. We chant the Compassion Sutra every day. That's not understanding it. And so be kind to yourself. Say, how? And that was an eye-opener for me when I started to ask people, be kind to yourself. And quite honestly, they said, how? They just didn't know. If you don't know how to be compassionate towards yourself, how on earth can you be compassionate towards others? You haven't really grasped what that word means. So, you can say that word to yourself, just like kindness. And listen afterwards. Kindness. 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 It's like a mantra, but the problem with mantras is people keep repeating them with no gaps in between. Kindness, kindness, kindness. May all beings be happy and well. May all beings be free of suffering. May all beings not be parted from their whatever they want. May all beings, may I open the heart, my door of my heart to all beings. May all beings be well and happy. And you don't give a chance for what those words meaning to actually to grow in your mind. So here we're learning how to know these qualities beyond the thoughts. Now that is how you can understand life. Not through thinking about it, but not neglecting the thought. So you have a role, a purpose. Having the thought and then stopping to listen, to feel what that word really means. And of course, once you have that feeling that you know what kindness is, you know what letting go is, you know what mindfulness is, now you're a very skilled meditator who has all these tools at your disposal. But, you know, one of the most important qualities which is missing is that kindness. People think they're kind, but you ain't. I don't know how many times I've told you to go to bed and have a rest. How many of you have done that and felt guilty? You're not being kind to yourself. How many said, no, I've had enough rest now, I'm going to meditate now. You know, I paid a lot of money for this, so I'm going to make the best out of it. You're not being kind at all. It's amazing just how cruel people are to themselves. And so in order to help you solve the problem of harshness to yourself, cruelty, You know, you sort of fell asleep when you were meditating. Oh, I shouldn't have fallen asleep. You know, I'm not me. Oh, you may have been late this morning for the whatever. Do you feel guilty? Oh, I'm late this morning. I shouldn't have been late. I decided to come for every chanting and I missed it. Oh, you made some other mistake. How many of you always beat yourself up for when you make mistakes? How many of you are not kind? So, in order to help you, we have teddy bear. You see, in this retreat, we have lots and lots of teddy bears. So far, they have been neglected, sitting there waiting to be used for learning how to be kind to yourself in your meditation. So we call this practice bear awareness. That's what we pass on. This is bear awareness. So what do you do with bear awareness? You take a teddy bear, put it on your lap, and meditate with it. Now you think, ah, oh, that's stupid. You know, I'm not into this sort of stuff. I want to get into jhanas. I want to get into deep meditation. I want to psychic. I want to understand the meaning of life. Not this teddy bear stupid stuff. That's for kids. That's a kindergarten, preschool. What have we got teddy bears here for? I'm an adult now. Try it. Because you put a teddy bear in your lap and you start meditating, it has a huge psychological meaning for you. They're soft, non-threatening, warm, cuddly. You can't put a teddy bear on your lap and not feel kindness. Not even Donald Trump. If he put a teddy bear on his lap, he'll say, oh, all the Mexicans, you can stay. Muslims, oh, okay, you can come in. It gives you kindness. Somebody, actually, I would say who it is, it's Bert. She sent me a joke this morning. And the joke was, you know, the president-elect, Mr. Trump, sort of at one of his press conferences, someone pulled out a gun. And somebody shouted out, Donald, duck! It's not bad, it's a bit weak, but it's still funny. It's going to happen one day. And the security detail, they could just fall over laughing instead of protecting the president. Anyway. Donald Duck. Anyway. Put your teddy bear in front of you. And then do your meditation. Whatever you want to meditate on. Just normal meditation, being aware of the body, but you also be aware of the teddy bear. And it's nice and soft. You're not hard on yourself anymore. You're not forceful. You get this beautiful mind of joy, happiness, softness. You are making peace, being kind, being gentle. And it's a very helpful meditation tool. The first people who introduced this was actually some people in Hong Kong. I go there every year to teach a retreat. And they brought two teddy bears with them on retreat. And those teddy bears, they were so well used. So much so that there's some very, very wealthy disciples in Hong Kong. It's in Hong Kong where they gave $30,000 for my meditation cushion, actually for the nuns' monastery. So very wealthy, very devout, and you couldn't believe the amount of money they were offering for these two bears. But no, the guy didn't want to sell them. No, he loved his bears. Reason was because after a little while, you get so warm and kind, and it encourages beautiful meditation, bear awareness. It creates that little bit of metta, the real metta, not the word, but what it's talking about, what it's meaning. Enough that when you add that to your meditation, you really just start flying in meditation. You get much more peaceful. Now, one of the reasons why you're not peaceful is not enough kindness. Because you have not enough kindness, we haven't got enough joy and happiness in the meditation. Because we haven't got enough joy and happiness, that is the reason why we go thinking about other stuff. I mentioned a couple of days ago that, you know, the thinking is, I mentioned just now, the thinking is the biggest problem. But instead of trying to stop the thoughts, bringing your mind back, bringing it back, bringing it back, that is endless because you're not getting to the root of the problem. Why are you restless? Why, when you've got nothing to do except just to be here, you don't have to think, you don't have to worry, you don't have to bring up the past, why do you do that? So always use the insight, the wisdom, to try and overcome these problems. Don't use force. It's sometimes stupid. I kept bringing my mind back, bringing it back, bringing it back, bringing it back, bringing it back. And it was endless. And I thought, what am I doing? Instead of actually just trying to force the mind to be on your breath, why does it always want to run away? And that's when you use your reflective powers rather than willpower. You start using wisdom power. And it became quite obvious why my mind always wanted to run away. And it was because my mind and I had a very bad relationship. If you've got a bad relationship with your partner, you want to run away. If you have a bad relationship with your job, you want to run away. In a bad relationship with your parents, with your mother-in-law, say, oh, you don't want to see her. There was this man who said, an English man, he said, oh, I always invite my mother-in-law over for Christmas. I've been inviting her over for Christmas for the last 20 years, but last year I decided to make a difference. I decided to let her in the house. Why is it that people have these bad relationships with people? That means you don't want to be with them. You have an enemy, maybe an ex-partner, and you see them on the other side of the road, and you just hide in the shop. You turn a corner. Why is it we're avoiding these people? Why, same reason why our mind avoids us. Because we've got a bad relationship with her or him. So I decided to change my relationship to my mind. Mind, if you want to wander off, that is fine by me. Off you go. If you want to fall asleep, fine by me. Have a good nap. If you want to think all sorts of stupid thoughts, fine by me. When I am kind to my mind, then my mind doesn't want to run away anymore. It stays with me. One of my seminal experiences. After 5 years as a monk, I was allowed to go wandering off. And for the range retreat, my sixth range retreat, I had the whole of Thailand to choose from for a place to spend my range retreat. And because I was an English monk, I found the perfect monastery up in the mountains where it was cool, in the middle of a tea plantation. Wherever I looked, there were tea bushes, as much tea as I could drink. This was heaven for an English monk. I often say that's why I was always interested in becoming a student of Ajahn Chah. Anyone whose name meant tea was the right monk for me. And if you were like Indian, you like chai, there's quite a few chais as well. You can go to see Ajahn Chai. But there wasn't any Ajahn coffees, really weird. But anyhow, that I realized over there that a beautiful place up in the mountains, idyllic for meditation. And even this is an abandoned monastery I was staying in. And I asked the villagers, how come there's no other monks here? And the villagers say, because they say it's too quiet for them. I thought, wow, it's not too quiet for me. The quieter the better. So it was the idyllic situation for my meditation, in theory. Because after 2 or 3 weeks, that's when I started getting restless. I started thinking. And being stupid, I try to stop those thoughts. And they got worse, and worse, and worse. And after about 3 or 4 weeks, that's when I was almost going crazy. I started thinking of what I say are unmonkish thoughts. Thinking of my ex-girlfriends. But I was only at that time 28, 29. I was wondering, I wonder if she's still available. Stop it. I wonder what she said. No. I want to be a monk. I really loved being a monk, honestly. But these thoughts kept coming up. And then they got worse, you know, romantic fantasies, even weird stuff started coming up. And I was trying to stop it. I'm a monk. You're not supposed to think these thoughts. But they kept coming in. And they were really driving me crazy. I just could not stop them. And so I was on my own, no one to talk to. So I went to the hall, bowed to the Buddha statue, and basically asked for help. And an idea, an insight came up. And the insight was to do a deal. And the deal was this. From 3 to 4 p.m. every afternoon, I would allow my mind to think the weirdest, strangest, sexiest of thoughts. The rest of the time, I'd be a good monk. I thought that's the best I can do. So, that was the deal. And I meditated. And it was as hard as ever. You know, you try and watch your breath, you try and be peaceful. But these thoughts would break down all your defenses. And they just come in. And you chase them out again. And then they come back in again. And when you do things like that, bringing the mind back, oh, you get so tired. But I am an honest monk. I've been trained and taught, if I have a promise, I will keep it. So 3 p.m., it's time for sexy thought time. And that's what I did. I just leant against the wall of my hut and said, okay, mind, anything goes now. And this is absolutely no exaggeration. This blew me away. For the next hour, I watched every breath without missing one. No problem at all. And this was weird. How come mind, when I say you can think whatever you want, all you want to do is watch the breath. When I say watch the breath, all you want to do is think sexy thoughts. Why? And you can understand why now. It's because I was trying to control my mind. My mind was throwing a tantrum. I was just running away, anywhere to get away from me, because I was not being kind to it. When I was kind to my mind, okay, mind, whatever you want to do, anything goes now. And the mind said, really? Oh, you're being kind to me now? I will stay with you. And it stayed with me without any effort at all. That taught me a huge lesson. A huge lesson. The reason why you are restless is because you're not kind to your mind. You're just controlling it. And that's why it will run away. Either it will get sleepy and fall asleep, or it will get restless. And there's no end of things you can think about. There's no end of the past you can just go over again and again and again and again. There's no end of the future fantasies you can think of and dream. As I say, that usually you start off with the useful thoughts, and when there's no more useful thoughts to think about, anything. The most ridiculous stuff. Just because you're running away. So, when you have a bit of kindness, a bit of teddy bear meditation, you find that you're being so kind to your body and mind, your mind doesn't want to go away from you. It loves you because you're loving it. So look at your mind like a being, like something. It's not you, it's not yours, but like some other like animal living on the planet, your mind. How would you treat that animal? If you've got a cat or a dog, and you treated your cat, your dog, like you treat your mind, you know, the RSPCA will put you in jail. But if you treat it with kindness, oh, you made a mistake, that's fine, you're just being a teddy bear. Oh, you just, you're tired, take a rest. You know, you need to think about something, off you go, you can think if you want to. Then you find you're so kind and loving to the mind. Your mind just wants to hang out with you. And that's me and my mind these days. I changed my relationship to my mind a long time ago. So now, my mind and I, we're the best friends. So much so that I'm not busy like giving talks or, you know, answering questions and stuff like that. You sit down and my mind says, ah, you're back again. Yay! Let's hang out together. So my mind and I chill out for hours effortlessly because we are the best of friends. So if you can change your attitude to your mind, you'll find your mind doesn't run away anymore. You literally chill out together. So if you're with a friend, you don't tell your friend what to do. If you're going to spend an afternoon with your friend, you don't say, right friend, this is what we're going to do this afternoon. You're going to help me just with all those little chores which my wife told me I have to do as soon as I get back from retreat. And then you're going to help me with my tax. And then you're going to make me a cup of tea and a cup of coffee. And then you're going to... You don't treat a friend like that. If you have an afternoon with a friend, what do you do? You say, friend, what do you want to do this afternoon? I said, ah, let's go and walk by the ocean. I said, oh, yeah, I wouldn't mind that. But let's have a cup of coffee, you know, by this wonderful little coffee shop by the ocean. Oh, that's a great idea. You work together with your friends. You don't tell your friend what to do. So how many of you have been telling your mind what to do? Tomorrow morning we're going to get up at 5 o'clock. Tomorrow morning, mind, you're going to sit down and no more falling asleep. You are going to chant with gusto tomorrow morning. Not, yo, so, tomorrow morning, mind, you're not going to eat so much at breakfast. Tomorrow morning, mind, you are going to pay full attention to the Dhamma Talk. Tomorrow morning. Is that what you've been doing? No wonder your mind is trying to escape from you. You control freak. So, be kind to your mind. Now, how you actually do that, one brilliant way, is every so often during the retreat, ask your mind, mind, what do you want? How are you? Don't sort of think you've got to sort of train your mind. You've got to befriend your mind. You know, one of the stories, Chinese Art of War, emperor with the best discipline in the imperial army. Emperor asked him, how, what's your secret? And the general said, I only tell my soldiers to do what they want to do. That's why they always follow orders. I read that as brilliant. So if you only tell your meditators to do what they want to do, of course, you have perfect discipline in the retreat. The point is, like, motivating. That general was a great motivator. So, when he said get up early in the morning, they wanted to get up early. In fact, they were usually up earlier than the general wanted them to, because they were so highly motivated. Train hard. They just wanted to train hard. The general was just saying something they wanted to do. If I tell you just at 11 o'clock, please eat lunch, you will all follow my orders. You're not doing what you want to do. So it's that motivating. That is what makes the mind your friend and train it. So you motivate it. Come on, let's hang out together, let's be peaceful. And because you have some experience of peace, and because, hopefully, you've noticed just how beautiful peace is. Just how delicious is kindness. And just how refined is gentleness. You've realized that you've motivated. The mind actually wants to be peaceful. It wants to be kind. It wants to be gentle. Not because you force it. You've motivated it. So you know what sometimes I used to do? When I got peaceful in meditation, I would actually tell my mind, see mind, see mind, mind, it's good, isn't it? Peaceful, yeah, it's lovely. So you don't want to think? Ah, I think it's awful. Be more peaceful. I was talking to my mind like you talk to a little kid, or like you talk to a pet dog, and it worked. Because my mind would actually see that peace is beautiful. What do I want to think for? Thinking is just such a pain. It never gets you anywhere except headaches. You don't get wise through thinking. Look, I went to a big university with great thinkers. They were so stupid. But, you know, in life, that's one of the reasons I never carried on with academia. See, all these so-called top professors, and was one at least was a Nobel laureate, and just, he didn't have any happiness. But he went to see an Ajahn Chah, he didn't think much, and he really had it together. He was happy. That inspired me. So after a while, I told my mind, see, what do you want to be like? Nobel laureate or Ajahn Chah? Mind looked, no, I'll take Ajahn Chah. Yeah, me too. So this was, I was motivating, convincing myself about the beauty of peace. Not forcing my mind to be peaceful, but just motivating it to be peaceful. So every time you are peaceful, even a small amount of peace, don't take it for granted and just, you know, get up and have a cup of coffee. Oh, enough peace for today, now I'm going to do something else. Linger there a while, feel it and appreciate it. Savor it. Just like, you know, someone's giving you a beautiful lunch today. So don't just gobble it down as quick as possible to go and do something else. Put the food in your mouth and savor it. Just get every taste of it. Really enjoy it to the max. That's what you do with peace or with happiness or with kindness. You savor it. Oh, this is really nice. Joyful. Oh yeah, I can have more of this. And once you savor it like that, you're reinforcing, you're training, motivating your mind, instead of forcing it, to go to peace more and more and more. To the point that when you've got a few minutes, you and your mind, what should we do today? And I said, peace, yeah, peace, yes, 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 yes. Just like I look at my mind like a dog sometimes. Just like, you know, you go and you're going to take the dog for a walk. You just start to touch the leash. And the dog starts wagging its tail and running around in circles. Yeah, we're going for a walk, we're going for a walk, woohoo, yes. That's my mind when we meditate. It runs around in circles, wags its tail if it had one. Yeah, we're going to meditate, woohoo, great. Because we've had such beautiful times in meditation. And I've lingered there with my mind to say, oh, it's nice, isn't it? To train my mind. So it has the insight, the understanding, and the inclination. How the Buddha actually said, it's a phrase which comes again and again and again in the suttas. It says, when a good meditator, whenever you find a little bit of peace, the mind leaps onto it. It just doesn't incline to it, it actually leaps onto it, it jumps onto it. Just like you see something you really, really like, straight on there, straight in there. Pakandati. And that is actually just how we train our mind. So that when we do get a little bit of peace, a little bit of softness, a little bit of joy, just the mind goes straight towards it. Doesn't resist, doesn't need to be told. It just goes for it straight away. So that is how we train our mind. And it means we overcome all those hindrances, the biggest hindrance of, you know, like thinking, 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 thinking. However, if that is a bit too refined for you, that gets to the heart of the matter. Like, you know, learning how to not control the mind, be a friend to the mind. It's not a slave, it's not a maid, you know, for the people in Singapore, Malaysia who have maids. They're not a maid you can tell what to do. They're the friend. Best friend, your mind. So find out what it needs. Look after it. Be kind to it. And then you find your mind will always want to stay with you. Restlessness disappears. The thinking, when you realize the thinking is just a waste of time, except if you listen to what the word says afterwards. Put spaces between the words. Don't just go onto a conversation. Spaces between the words. In those. Isn't that beautiful? Notice how beautiful the space is between the words are. Wow. You don't need to be spiritual at all, even religious at all. Everyone really appreciates the silence. Now, one of my experiences early on, Many of you have gone to meditate over the road in Bodhinyana Monastery. Sorry, yesterday afternoon we were using that for our Patimokkha recitation, so we kicked a few people out. Apologise, we had to do that. But today, tomorrow, it's free for you. You can go over there. It's a very peaceful hall. Years and years ago, must be about almost 30 years ago now, building our main water tanks, because we have to collect all rainwater. We don't get any pipe water from the government in this place. We don't get anything from the government here except problems and regulations and stuff. But anyway, there's only one man built the whole tank. He's an incredibly strong fella. You know, just, I couldn't understand how he could, you know, wheelbarrow all of that concrete and just put it in the formwork and just these huge tanks. Anyway, he did it. And when he was finished, a really nice guy, but very rough. You know, just a real rough Australian grano worker. And after he finished, you know, he said, "Would you mind, Brahm?" You call me Brahm. "Would you mind, Brahm, if I came and looked inside your church?" And I, well, you know, he doesn't know anything about Buddhism. So, you know, I wasn't going to sort of try and teach him, it's not a church, it's a meditation hall. I was, yeah, sure you can. So I went with him. And he was, you know, just in this, like a singlet, all really dirty and torn, and shorts all covered with cement and thongs, really badly dressed, really rough, talking all the way to the hall. And I took him inside, and he had his big, he didn't have sort of thongs, and he had boots on. I said, "Ah, you don't need to take off your boots, it'll take forever." I said, "Just poke your head inside the hall." So he went in the lobby, and he just put his head inside. And I was with him, and it was one of the amazing experiences. He stopped talking. He went silent. And he'd been talking all the way, non-stop. He went silent for about a minute, just with his head inside. And then he turned around and said, "This is good, ain't it, Brahm?" That's what he said, "This is good, ain't it, Brahm?" And I really appreciate that, because somehow or other the silence just caught him off guard. The peace was just so strong that he could feel that. Even though he was a rough grano worker, he also was a kind person. He felt the peace, and it stopped him dead in his tracks. Couldn't speak at all. Isn't it beautiful? Because he appreciated the peace and the silence. You don't need to give people a Dhamma talk, it's right there in the space. Between the words. Why don't you start to recognize that more? Why don't you start to look at where the words are pointing to? Your mind gets very calm, very peaceful. Thoughts stop. And once the thoughts stop, the biggest problem in the meditation is gone. And you soon just get into beautiful, wonderful meditation. So that is part one of solving the problems of meditation. And of course you see there's lots of these teddy bears available here. So please take one. And please, you don't have to come and tell me afterwards or write the note, "Ajahn Brahm, it worked." Of course it works. I know it works. So take a nice teddy bear. The best ones will go quite fast. And cuddle it. And you'll find your meditation goes to another level. It works. Because a little bit of kindness, softness, friendliness to your mind and to your body means your body wants to work with you. And your mind is no longer afraid of you. You come together in kindness. Kindness is one of those things the Buddha always talked about, always encouraged, but people forget. I went to meditation retreats in Zen monasteries, and they used the stick on the back to try and wake you up. That's not Buddhist. Actually, there's a story about that. I already mentioned I went to Hong Kong very often, every year. And one of the places I used to stay was one of these monasteries. They always had visiting monks there. So it was a great, it was like an international coffee shop for monks. So, you know, we'd have a cup of tea and coffee there, and you'd get all the gossip. You know, the international gossip. What's happening with Buddhism in China and the surrounding countries. And, you know, it's really interesting finding out what's happening. And they One of the monks from mainland China told me this story, and it makes me laugh even now thinking about it. It was one of these Chan retreats where the Zen master did use this meditation stick. So if you started nodding, he'd whack you on the back. And it was a lay retreat, and this meditation master, quite well known apparently in China at the time, there was one of the disciples there, a middle-aged woman, Chinese, and she started nodding, and so the master hit her on the back with a Zen stick. Immediately, she got out her mobile phone and called the police. True. And the police came and arrested him. It's against the law in China, even in a monastery, to hit someone over the back with a stick. So they took the master to jail. You can't do that these days. Even here, if I tried that, you call the police and I wouldn't have a leg to stand on. I'd go in jail for assault or whatever. I don't know what. And I think, well, okay, fair enough. It's a bit unfair, but they should tell them, Mark, for goodness sake, this is 21st century. You shouldn't do this stuff anymore. And it's also, what's that to do with Buddhism? It's not kindness. But even worse than that, when I went to Bhutan, if any of you go to Bhutan, you go into the Dzongs, the monasteries there. And absolutely, none of you here were with me when went there. They were just, we had to leave the main, one of the little halls there because they're having a meeting. All the monks were meeting. And what they were meeting about was they were going to appoint a new discipline master for the monks. I didn't know what discipline master was. But I did know afterwards, because after the election he came out. And he had this big whip with three long thongs on it. And, I wasn't a member of the monastery, but he whacked it on the ground. All the pigeons and the birds flew up in the air. And I thought, wow, this is Buddhism. And then that was when the guide told us, he said, even though you're not a member of this monastery, if you're in the monastery grounds, he has full rights to whip you. And at that, I saw everybody, including myself, do a few steps away from this guy to make sure we were out of range. It was really scary, honestly. I said, what's that got to do with Buddhism? There's no compassion there at all. That's really mean stuff. So sometimes I just wonder, and okay, even Theravada as well. We can be so mean to each other. Come on, get up. Sit up straight. Take that smile off your face. We're serious. This is dukkha. This is suffering. Come on, suffer some more. Don't tell any jokes. We're not here to hear jokes. We just want real stuff. What real stuff? That's just more suffering, isn't it? That's more cruelty. It's one of the reasons why, you see, someone who's tired, say, please go to bed. That's compassion, kindness. Be kind to yourself. If your leg is hurting, please sit on a chair. That's what we've got the chairs for. I made sure we brought those chairs, and we did a huge amount of research to find the best chairs for meditating. Tried them out myself. What is not too soft, what is not too hard, the right height, the angle on the back to make them as comfortable as possible. We even put sort of some armrests on there in case people just start falling over in meditation. And for those of you who do nod forward, we do have some seat belts. So just a little bit of kindness. And that's just why these retreats are not just very popular, but why they really work as well. You get great meditation when you know how to be kind. Because of compassion and kindness, that is what stops the restlessness. Force, your mind will rebel even more. Kindness, letting things be, and the mind becomes still. Naturally, you have a wonderful time. So there we go. That is the talk for today. So three sadhus. Sadhu! 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 Very good, yes, very good. But bow three times to Buddha. One, two, three. And now you can go. Okay. Have a wonderful morning and see you later on.